Welcome to Wednesday afternoon at 5 o'clock. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I've got a great hour of varied poetic and creative programming in store for you today, the 2nd of December. In the second half of the show, we're going to hear from John Bow on the live line. John Bow is perhaps the most senior instructor in the university writing program, having taught here for, I think, something like 30 years. 20 years ago, he and colleagues created WOE, Writing on the Edge. It's a journal of writing, composition, and rhetoric that is eminently readable, interesting, while often at the same time being theoretically challenging, as well as filled with the sorts of writing that you wouldn't expect in an academic journal, such as fiction, offbeat narrative, and even poetry. John Bow will be joining me in the second half of the program to talk about the 20th anniversary of Writing on the Edge. In the first half of the show, though, we'll be joined by Brian Ang. Brian is a familiar voice, and to some of you, face. For those of you who have been hip to the KDVS scene for a while, he has had a show here since January of 2007 called Farewell Transmission, which you can catch on Sunday afternoons. He's also a poet who's going to be giving a poetry reading tomorrow evening with a couple colleagues, and I was so interested in making sure that you all knew about that that I asked Brian to stop by the main studio here at KDVS on an uncharacteristic Wednesday afternoon to talk about his work, to read some poems, and to tell us what we can expect tomorrow evening. That, some great bumper music, and a preview of tonight's performance by Bob Ostertag at Bistro 33's Poetry Night. A full slate of programming available to you, the listener of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back with Brian Ang. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis. We've been listening to some music from the CD Triumphs and Tragedies. It's a CD by my first guest, Brian Ang. He's a musician, a poet, an essayist, a graduate student, and an Aggie. He's also, as we'll find out later, as he tells us a story or two, he's also one of the MRAC 52. Is it 51 or 52?
52.
52. 52. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Brian Ang. Brian, thanks for coming on the radio show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. So, I'm sure people are interested in the MRAC 52, but let's get to that later. Let's compel them to listen to our conversation about some creative matters. I want to hear about your work as a musician or hear some more about it. But I want especially to highlight the work that you've been doing as a poet. You wrote a lot and read a lot of poetry as an undergraduate here at UC Davis. What was it that compelled you to stick around in Davis as a graduate student in the Master's in Creative Writing program?
I really wanted to work with Joshua Clover.
Mm-hmm.
He has definitely been a important figure in my development in poetry. It was really his class, his 45 class, that kind of gave me the kickstart to get interested in poetry. And we also, the program here is very attractive. You get to teach, and you get to spend some time with a small group and really just get down to business. So it's been a great time. I've been here in the graduate program for, I'm in my second year now, so over a year, and it's been as good as realistically could hope for.
Excellent. English 45, for those of you who don't know, is Introduction to Poetry. It's a class that's been taught by Joshua Clover, who's a professor in the English department at UC Davis. He is also an essayist and a poet. And like Brian and myself, he is a KDVS DJ. He's really following in our footsteps, I'd say, Brian. Yeah. All right. Great. Well, not all of our listeners will know Joshua Clover's work, but you talk some about the influence that he's had on you. Would readers of his work and yours see influence, kind of poetic and aesthetic influence between the ways that you all approach poems?
I'm pleased to say that I think our work is very different.
Uh-huh.
It springs from some similar concerns, but I don't want to copy him. He's already done that mode really, really well. So I wanted to find my own thing to do. So there's similarities, but I hope that people will find them different too.
I knew you as an undergrad, and I knew that you always had a book under your arm in various jobs that you've held, and when you were spotted out on the quad or in the Voorhees courtyard or in a library carrel. Could you tell folks at home some of the poets who have been important to you, whether or not their influence can be seen in your work?
Some of my favorite poets, probably the first poet I fell in love with was Robert Creeley. He spoke to many of the concerns that turned me on to music, kind of the lyric-based poetry, and he introduced me to a whole range of experimental work. I found that his form, the way that he approached his concern through form, was very exciting, and introduced me to Louis Zukofsky, Jackson McClough, John Ashbery, Bruce Andrews, Kevin Davies. Those are a handful of my favorites. Michael Palmer.
Excellent. Now, you talked a moment ago about the relationship between poetry and music. You were pretty well practiced as a musician when you arrived in UC Davis. What was that? Maybe like 6 years ago?
That was 2004. So five years ago.
Yeah. And so tell me about how is it that you came to music, and how would you characterize your music for people who don't know you?
See, I came to music, I think I first heard Radiohead.
Yeah.
And that just totally blew my mind with music is more than just the easily consumable music you hear on the radio or MTV. And that opened, like, as soon as I heard Radiohead, OK Computer. I threw away my old CDs, and I just went and bought all Radiohead CDs. And at first I wanted to make music like that, but then I didn't have thousands of dollars to buy a recording studio.
Right.
So I turned instead to Bob Dylan, and I remember that his lyrics just totally blew my mind, too. Like, that was another major moment for me. So my music progressed in the folk vein, and when that was my main medium that I spent my most time with, it kind of culminated in kind of hard folk, for lack of a better term.
Excellent. Well, if you're just joining us, Brian Ang is my guest, and he is the author of Triumphs and Tragedies, the CD. He's also a poet who's been in the creative writing program, the master's in creative writing program for the last year and a quarter here at UC Davis, and before that he was an undergraduate. He's a graduate of, was it Yuba City High?
Mm-hmm.
Of Yuba City High. And obviously, he's an Aggie. You might know him from his radio show, Farewell Transmission, Sunday afternoons here at KDVS. Well, you you mentioned, what was it, Hard Folk? Could you choose a track that we should listen to before we go to our public service announcement? What number should I grab here?
Play the second track, Burning Alone.
All right. So here, so you can get a sense of the music of my guest, Brian Ang, here is Burning Alone from his CD that we have queued up here at the station, Triumphs and Tragedies. My name is Andy Jones, and you're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
I'm burning hard and fast, tearing myself to shreds. I'm trying to make it last, so I can finally rest my head. I'm gazing at the stars above, so much that I don't know. It's the future I'm thinking of, so much beyond my control. Dreaming towards the day, peace will know. I wish that it was today. I feel so alone. That it was today. I feel so alone.
That was Brian Ang playing to us his song, Burning Alone. Well, I've been burning to share with you all something from the sponsor of this particular radio program, and that is the YOLO Federal Credit Union. We're going to hear from them for 44 seconds, and then when we come back, I'll ask Brian Ang some more about his poetry. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the YOLO County Federal Credit Union. The YOLO County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
Brian Eng is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. He's giving a reading tomorrow. But if you're looking for events, I also want to mention that tonight, Bob Ostertag, the professor of technicultural studies, the experimental audio artist, 12 CDs under his belt, 3 books, 2 movies, if I remember correctly, he's going to be performing, reading from his latest book, Creative Life. That'll be tonight at Bistro 33's Poetry Night starting at 9 o'clock. That is a free event and open to people of all ages. If you're interested in seeing how a creative professional, like my friend Brian here, how a creative professional spends his time, then you can come by and see for yourself and meet Bob Ostertag. So, Brian Eng, you've been writing poetry for more than a year now, and I want to hear about that, but I think someone else wants to hear about it, too. We are getting a caller. So let's just, like a good DJ, you've already got your headphones on. Let's see who it is. Caller, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you very much, Dr. Andy.
And who's this?
This is Dan Peterson.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for phoning.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah, totally. Hey, I've got a quick question. Do you know if Bob Ostertag is going to be playing music, any of his experimental music, or will he just be reading?
I believe he will just be reading at this particular event.
Well, that will still be cool. Brian, hello. Good to hear you again, always.
Yeah, man. Good to hear from you.
Cool. Well, thanks, you guys. I will talk to you later.
Excellent. Thanks for calling. Maybe I'll see you tonight at Bistro 33.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there.
All right, great.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Brian Eng, tell me about your first year in the creative writing program as a graduate student here at UC Davis. Did you have certain goals when you began the program, and were those goals more centered on productivity in terms of getting lots of poems written, or with a certain number of discoveries and revelations that you wanted to have under your belt after the first year?
I think those two are kind of the same for me.
All right.
Like going into the program, I was really excited to be there, and to I'm proud to say I'm just addicted to learning stuff.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to keep on learning stuff. And one of the best things about starting the program is I found a friend that was on such consonance with my thinking. It still amazes me. Aaron Begg is my friend. And the first words that we said to each other in like the orientation was, like, hey, I'm Brian, I'm Aaron. Like, and I said to him, do you know what language poetry is? He says, of course, like, that's awesome. And he's from the Bay Area, where experimental poetry is very alive and active and rich. And that's a staple there. Whereas I didn't know anyone at Davis and knew about that, and that's what I was really psyched about. And it's sort of because of kind of some of the great conversations and him pushing me pushing him to better work, that so much of the stuff that I figured out over the last year, I don't think I could have done it without friends. So it reaffirmed the importance of poets need friends, artists need friends to push each other.
Absolutely. I started this program, the PhD program, rather than the creative writing program, it'll be 20 years ago next year. And so you and I have learned from some of the same professors, but I agree with you that the cohort that you come in with is so important, especially in a place like Davis, where, as you know, as a musician and KDBS DJ, a lot of the richest culture is kind of homegrown rather than our being consumers of the culture of a big metropolitan cosmopolitan metropolis. You know, if you go to UC Berkeley or UCLA, there's of course a great number of cultural artifacts that you can sample all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we get to create a lot of our own stuff here in Davis, and therefore the coterie of friends that you make right at the start is really important. Brian Eng is my guest. You might know him from his Sunday afternoon radio show, Farewell Transmission. And Brian, for folks who don't know your work as a DJ, talk about the format and some of the subjects that you cover in your radio show.
Well, I try to keep it as dynamic as possible. Pretty much whatever I'm thinking about that week. I like to play some poetry every week. I use the show a lot to, as very much in my approach to poems, as a way of thinking things out. So whatever problem or concern I have, I try to gather some material for the show and use the show as a vehicle to figure things out. And often I get callers who are interested in it too, and they contribute what they have or challenge it or question it. And then also I like to just play rock music and pop music and catchy music that so kind of fusing two things I love about KWS is helps me think things out. Like I love public affairs show, like your show, but also I hear some great music. So, but I'll just do whatever I feel like every week, and that keeps me the most interested in it.
Excellent. You started in January 2007, if mm-hmm. I remember correctly. And tell me about, in terms of the community of KWS and other things that you really dig about KWS, what comes to mind?
We're a bunch of lovable misfits, bunch of lovable weirdos, and everyone has such a great, you know, area of expertise and, you know, eccentricities, and it's those things should be preserved and not stamped out like so much of other institutions in society want to do. Like, it's a beautiful thing. So I made a lot of great friends here, learned a lot of new things, and yeah,
that's great. Brian Eng is here. He's a poet who's going to be reading tomorrow night at 1:26 Voorhees. And Brian, does that start at 8 o'clock?
That's correct. And there's two other people in the grad program that will be in it too, Noah McGee in fiction and Nishad Olhak in poetry. So it'll be a fun night.
Excellent. And that's at 1:26 Voorhees. And people who don't know the UC Davis campus should drive as close as you can to 1st and A Streets, park your car legally, and then walk right over to 1st and A. The lit room that you see on the first floor will most likely be 1:26 Voorhees. It's in the northeast corner of the building. There'll be chairs. In the past, I've seen refreshments at some of these graduate program readings. Do you know if that'll be the case tomorrow, Brian?
There'll be refreshments.
Excellent.
You can count on that.
And so that's tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock, 1:26 Voorhees. I've been attending these grad program readings for a couple decades now, and they're always varied. They're always gratifying, and you'll always find something that you like. So you get to hear three different voices of up-and-coming writers. And Brian Eng's poetry, which we'll hear a sample of in a moment, is really something to hear. So I'm going to try to make it tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, and perhaps I'll see you there. I had to be careful at the end there not to do a call to action and tell people to go. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell you all, I'm going to try to go. All right. Brian, it's 5:23. I'm enjoying our conversation, but I know people want to hear some of your poetry. Could you share something with us?
I'll be happy to. This poem is called M-X. It's coming out in the journal West Wind Review sometime next year. This great review out of Oregon has a lot of contemporary experimental bent to it, that journal, and I was really proud to be in it. M-X. The room is a specter seen during total eclipse of suns. Events rain down as sand. History does not seem to hurry. A mathematic calm controls the architecture which holds the sword, not a placard for non-smokers, and a man sweats blood to put through a railway, an ice cake. The waves are a forest in the stratosphere, the color of the sky frozen in an ice cake or a body. The cinema is isolated in the stream. Slow farmers and ranchers crowd the offices. Children are hidden, lying in blue lakes of acid, light pouring down, cleaving them away. A child of my age, a mere infant, 35, knew the coal was stolen in the sunlight, the gate cut by shadow, The wharves are full of broken ships, hardly a home without a loss. We have not always known this division when the sense is entirely destroyed. Small windows open and shut in a photograph of the earth, not image instruments of change. Those it is cunning enough to preserve hallucinate a candle. You take a well-earned vacation to islands hidden in blood and money. The retina itself seeks equilibrium. Go with the ghost's arm of a dead friend. Girls in the temple are pranked by the chokecherry tree. In their minds are stinking corruption. Please, may I go back there? My last letters to you finally congeal into an impenetrable substance, an alphabet. The truth of the answer is false, to preserve the country as a whole, but I refuse. Once I saw something like you with flies, habits of freedom now formed of holes. The poison for my inheritance, a smallish galaxy for an alcove. Principles, old shoes, profit, the remains of a gigantic man, pompons, petiole, mouth, thumb of time. It is all over before it was over a year ago on her birthday. Lifted like a temporality after 20 years of struggle, hallucinating nature and paradise. The tendency of the legal profession to side with authority. Carbuncular, smiling system of politics at full speed. The lords lay an embargo, the cream to go into their salaries. The poor pull down hard on their skulls with a bird's-eye view of the world, praying to the lords like good citizens and going back to commercials. What is burning and breaking into darkness? Dig it upright as posts and fragments. When morning lights up the shelves and battalions, there are no righteous wars in the spring and autumn. The rest is exploitable. Lie down in this place to sleep. Workers paid in full have a run for their money until they are at the ends of their tether. The illogical is always logical. To rob is a portioned lot. Spokes of smoke arise from recondite recesses, the tail of a tiger tearing to arrive. Sleep with a long, dry, harsh call above the fruited plain. Brag of faith, this is not the philosophy of one individual. His statesmanship is incompatible with real independence. The day she died was my birthday. I must go now to her grave, bang into flowers and candy. Here are your dead, leaving art to make the most of death in a monument, skillfully inhabiting everything which we really are. The words I mourn are and are not your own. Thus one modernizes his lute. Damn it, wage labor. We who sleep under you afraid to hear our own voices. Against the truth, unity, rising and falling, then frozen in circulation. The land stands deserted, all waste and drifting vessels. The will to mourn is not appropriated. Ephiliality that binds things together. Ever-shifting change, movement of bodies, dialect of dust. Out of the fire and out of the mouth on this plane of sweet speech. Our apartment is thus favored by the spoken, a bird caught in a harpsichord negatively intensifying the negative. Not all dreams should be spoken, sweetheart. The seclusion found there in the humid mirror. Greetings. My voice echoes yours.
That was Brian Eng, poet, KDVS DJ, and musician. He'll be reading tomorrow evening at 126 Voorhees on the UC Davis campus. You can find that at 1st and A Streets in the city of Davis. Brian Eng, thanks so much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great job. All right, and now a little bit more music of Brian Eng. We'll be back soon with John Bow. This is KDVS.
I got twisted confusion about everyone I know. I got twisted confusion about everyone I know.
I got twisted confusion and I can't tell friends from foes. Can't understand what I do that way. I can't understand what I do that way. I can't understand why I'm always alone. Sometimes didn't go as planned, right from the start. Sometimes didn't go as planned, right from the start. Sometimes didn't go as planned, till they all fall apart.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
This is Dr. Andy with an important message before we get to my next guest, John Bow. Airco Mechanical reminds us that we're all a bit concerned about driving during the holidays due to the number of people who may be drinking and driving. Remember that concern before you have that one for the road. Take care of yourself and others. Please, don't drink and drive. This important message is a courtesy of Airco Mechanical in Sacramento. They may be reached online at aircomech.com. They're on the air wishing everyone a safe and happy holiday season. My next guest this afternoon is John Bow. John Bow is a colleague of mine in the university writing program and a campus character and favorite teacher for decades now. John Bow is a poet. He's a musician. He's a storyteller who's been featured at many festivals. Some of you might know him from Picnic Day at UC Davis in the past. He's also participated in the California Storytelling Festival. He's been on ABC's 2020 and has appeared in many clubs and cafes, most notably the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. He's the author of the books Life Itself, Messiness is Next to Godlessness, and other essays, and co-author of the book Your Joke is in the Email, Cyber Laughs from Mouse Potatoes. He is one of the editors of Writing on the Edge, which this very quarter celebrates its 20th anniversary. And that's why I've asked John Bow to come back to this radio program to talk to us about WOE, Writing on the Edge. John Bow, welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you very much, Dr. Andy.
Well, it's great to have you here. Last time we were here, we talked about jazz and poetry and jingles, and that was a lot of fun. But now you're a representative of something much bigger than either one of us, and that is WOE. Writing on the Edge. Tell folks at home what inspired WOE more than 20 years ago.
Well, about 1988, the American Federation of Teachers, AFT, negotiated a contract that meant lecturers could get three-year contracts and be more or less permanent faculty at UC Davis. When that happened, a number of us in the writing program suddenly felt more of a sense of professionality,
right?
That we were going to be long-term writing teachers at this institution. And one of the things we decided to do, well, let's start a journal, sort of like Andy Hardy and Judy Garland in the old movies of Let's Put On a Show. We'd been reading the composition journals in the field and found them, frankly, unreadable. The college Englishes and the College Composition and Communication Journal, Journal of Advanced Composition. They are written in this academic, boring, unreadable tone with giant paragraphs and giant sentences. We decided we want a journal that, while it focused on writing and the teaching of writing, was written in the style of the essayists we taught, that it sounded more like E.B. White than some post-structuralist theorist.
Right.
We wanted to make a cross between College English and Rolling Stone. Every issue was going to have interviews with writers and well-known writing teachers, and we'd have poetry and fiction and essays and articles, all on the subject of writing, teaching, writing. And so we start out with our first issue in fall 89. We bought a mailing list to send out for subscribers and got enough subscribers to pay for the printing of that first issue. We've been self-sufficient. We get some support from the university, thank God. But we basically pay for ourselves out of subscription, and amazingly, we've lasted 20 years ago today, much like Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. We started 20 years ago today.
Excellent. John Bowe is my guest, and he is a continuing lecturer at the University of California, Davis. He's taught for many years for the university writing program. And so how has Woe changed over the last 20 years? I'm sure you all were impressed at the start that you made it to year one and year two, but now, after two decades, you've got some momentum.
Well, probably we get more submissions, so we can be pickier on what we accept. We probably accept 1 out of 10 submissions.
Right.
We do what's called blind review, which is classical, that we send out the manuscripts to readers who don't know who the author is. So I've been rejected by my own journal.
Nice.
On an article I wrote. So when friends of mine are rejected, I can say, well, I've been rejected too. You have to take your chances with blind review. But since we get more submissions, I think our quality has improved. We've also, our covers have improved. I have a friend who's a graphic artist. I think there's no doubt we have the most beautiful covers of any academic journal. I would compete for that one. I have subjective prejudice in favor of what's inside the magazine, but I think objectively speaking, we have the most beautiful covers.
Wonderful. Tell me about some of the folks who you've worked for. Do you have a large paid staff with lots of secretarial help?
Oh, no. It's all other university writing program lecturers.
Yeah.
We have an editorial board from around the country of various well-known rhetoricians and writing teachers. And they helped us, especially in the early days, and they occasionally review manuscripts. We don't work on them too much. Most of the work is done by other lecturers, Eric Schrader, Marlene Clark, Dale Flynn, Scott Herring, Carl Whithouse. If I'm leaving somebody else, I'll feel terrible. And lots of other lecturers in the writing program who read manuscripts, do interviews for us of writers, subscribe to the magazine, because without subscriptions, we wouldn't stay in existence. It really, and we've never had any paid staff. I had a couple of interns once, but it was more work to tell the interns what to do than to do it myself.
Right.
Given the nature of the job. So we pretty much do it all, down to, stamping the envelopes and mailing the letters to get people to resubscribe.
Wonderful. Now, for people who know and respect UC Davis and appreciate that students coming out of UC Davis write so well, even a lot of those people may not know too much about the university writing program. The fact that the writing program has been well-regarded by U.S. News and World Report is an exemplary program in recent years. What are some of the other ways that the university writing program at UC Davis has distinguished itself or might be distinguished from other writing programs around the United States?
Well, one of the other ones is the most obvious, is we're celebrating our 20th anniversary of Writing on the Edge at the same time as the 20th anniversary of Prized Writing. These journals started out the same time, and the same groups of lecturers were involved in them, though Prize Writing was really started by Eric Schrader and Kathy Dixon.
And what is Prize Writing?
Prize Writing is a journal that every year publishes the best writing done by undergraduates at UC Davis in any subjects. A group of lecturers volunteer their time and read 200 to 500 submissions and pick the 10 or 20 what they consider the best essays, and they're published in a book. The students get $200 each as an honorarium, thanks to support from the provost office and from John Lasqua, the Davis writer who's been very generous to Prize Writing. God bless him. And there's a wonderful ceremony. So the students get published. And the essays they're published every year, they're quite useful to use in teaching because you can show students in your classes what a really excellent paper, history paper, English paper, biology paper looks like. And every year, this too is celebrating its 20th anniversary. Interestingly, they both started, had their first issues in fall 1989. There are many things. The writing program has a wonderful workshop program that consults with teaching assistants and faculty across the disciplines to help them with the teaching of writing, to improve their writing and their teaching of writing. And lots of individual university writing program faculty have writing lives, either as poets like yourself or writers of prose or textbooks. Very much we're full of people. While we are primarily teachers, we have typical academic lives, interest in writing and research and service to the university.
Excellent. Well, we're going to take a quick break, John, and then
sure.
When we return, I'd love it if you could read something either of yours or maybe from an edition of, whoa, Writing on the Edge, UC Davis's Journal
yeah.
of Composition and Writing.
I'd be happy to.
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis. We'll be back in a moment.
Désolé, maintenant, Steve Coleman and Five Elements.
Ricardo Montalbán.
Les habla Ricardo Montalbán. Hay muchas maneras de medir el éxito. Para los Shriners son los casi 700,000 niños con problemas ortopédicos o quemaduras que ellos han ayudado tratándolos por toda América del Norte con los últimos adelantos médicos por más de 80 años y completamente gratis. Hay un hospital Shriners que trata a los niños de esta zona. Si conoce a un niño que los Shriners podrían ayudar, llame al 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, dispensando ayuda y esperanza a los niños desde hace más de 80 años.
If you're just joining us, this is KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. A couple events coming up that I wanted to remind you of. We had Brian Ng here in the studio in the first half of the program. Brian and two other creative writers from the creative writing program, a graduate program at UC Davis, will be giving a reading tomorrow evening, Thursday, the 3rd of December, at 8 o'clock in 126 Voorhees. That's at the corner of 1st and A Streets in the city of Davis. As you heard, Brian is a fine poet, and many people are looking forward to hearing his performance and that of his colleagues tomorrow night at 8 at 126 Voorhees. This evening, tonight, the 2nd of December, Bob Ostertag, the musician, filmmaker, and essayist, will be reading from his new book. It's called Creative Life: Music, Politics, People, and Machine. It's a collection of journalistic and autobiographical essays that explore the parallels and variations between and among artistic media. That's tonight at Bistro 33's Poetry Night, 226 F Street, starting at 9 o'clock. There will also be an open mic, a chance for you to perform something, beginning at 10 o'clock. Right now, though, we've got John Bowe. He's one of the editors of Writing on the Edge, which is UC Davis's Journal of Writing, Composition, and Rhetoric. And he's also an essayist, a poet, and a musician himself. He wears about as many hats as Bob Ostertag, though not all the same ones. And he has something in his hand that he's going to read to us, but I don't know if it's something of his own or something from a recent edition of Writing on the Edge. John, what do you have for us?
I thought I'd read in the upcoming issue of Writing on the Edge, which is just going to come out to celebrate our 20th anniversary. I have a section where I excerpt about 30 of the people we've interviewed, highlights of interviews, John McPhee and Amy Tan and Margaret Atwood and Calvin Trillin, et cetera, et cetera. We've interviewed some of the major writers in America.
Great.
And actually around the country, around the world. And so I can read as many excerpts as you get tired of. I've just marked a few of them. But I do want to say that the metaphor of as many hats, I was hoping you were going to say I wore as many hats as Bartholomew Cubbin.
That was, I almost said that, yeah.
Really, that seemed a natural place to go with his 100 hats of Bartholomew Cubbin, but that's all right.
Okay.
Okay, I thought I'd start off with a little quotation. These are writers basically talking about their writing process. Michael Pollan, who wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma, or the subject of UC Book Project book, he told us, "For me, the key strategy is starting from a place of ignorance or naivete, not starting from a place of authority or expertise. If you look at most of my pieces, they're educations. They tell the story we always have available to us when we're writing about anything, our education in that subject. I always start off as a kind of an idiot and gradually work towards a position of greater knowledge and authority on the subject. So I'm never lecturing people, or if I am, it's not until the end when they're already with me. What turns people off is somebody standing on a soapbox saying, 'Here, I figured this out. Let me tell you the truth.' Instead, I dramatize the process of acquiring the truth, if you can call it that." And I think that's a very nice description of what indeed is Pollan's procedure.
It's a great place to get started, and it makes me impressed with Pollan and other people who I've read in Woe, that you sit down and ask them a question, and they're so eloquent, they often seem to speak in paragraphs.
Like, yes, well, writers, we've discovered interviewing them, love to talk about their writing and talk very well about their writing. Just today, Eric Schrader and I interviewed Eric Weiner, who's here at Davis for the book project.
Right.
Writing about happiness. And he was just so articulate. You know, he was articulate at breakfast, but once he started talking about his writing, it was like he spoke in complete paragraphs.
Wonderful. All right, good. Do you have another one for us?
Sure. This is Susan Orlean, who wrote The Orchid Thief and other books. "I also think when you're working on a story versus when you're just a civilian, you can think of your courage as like the phenomenon of lifting a car up if it's squishing a baby. Suddenly you have this superhuman strength. I think you have superhuman self-confidence when you're working on a story. When I worked on The Orchid Thief, I went walking through the swamp. When I went back to look at the swamp, I couldn't believe I'd ever done that. I had honestly had a moment of thinking, did I make that up? I mean, never, never could I have imagined stepping into this swamp. It was the most forbidding, creepy environment I could imagine. And yet I did go in, sort of like a hunter being captured by the prey quality of it. I remember at one point walking after La Roche, who's the hero of the story, in the swamp thinking, what kind of idiot would go hiking through a swamp just to get some dumb flower? Then I thought, what kind of idiot would go hiking through a swamp just to get one story?
Huh.
It was exactly parallel. The naturalness of that passion to know something made it easy for me."
That's very nice. What year did that take place? Do you remember?
Oh, that was about 5 years ago. I actually went to Boston to interview her, and she was just so gracious and articulate. This little 5-foot-tall redheaded woman, 40 years old, just become pregnant, who had the most incredible courage going off and doing stories. She'd go to a University of Alabama football game and go up to college kids and say, "Can I go to your fraternity party to write a story on them?" Or go to high schools in the Bronx, et cetera.
Right.
It really is a case when she's working on a story, she's about the most courageous person in the world. And doesn't look like it when you look at her.
Right. Wonderful. Great. Let's hear another one.
Here's Stephen Jay Gould, who has an interesting way of writing. "Nobody can write perfect prose, but I do internal revision as I do it. If I write a sentence, I might correct it then, but I almost never shift a paragraph. After it's over, I never insert a paragraph. I like to say I'm a Platonist with respect to essays, and I really am. I think there is a right way, there is a way in which each essay goes. Once you have a subject, there is really one way in which it goes. Once you figure it out, that's the way it goes. You have an outline, right? You might write an infelicitous sentence you have to change, but the logical structure is what it is, and as long as you follow that, you shouldn't have to add paragraphs to switch them around. The very notion of switching around a paragraph, which some writers tell me they always do, I don't even conceive how you can do that, because there's a logical structure and you follow it. If you have it right, then switching a paragraph is inverting the logical structure. I just don't know why you'd ever do it." And I think that's so much like a scientist writing.
Absolutely.
Not at all. I switch paragraphs around all the time, but he has this logical way of writing. And each of these writers, when you read the interviews, it's great fun as a teacher then to teach the have the students read an interview and then to teach an essay of Stephen Jay Gould or Susan Orlean, and you can see how what they say about writing reflects their own writing process.
I got to know Stephen Jay Gould through stories a little bit before I ever read his work, because my uncle for many years was editor of Natural History magazine. And, of course, Gould's essays appeared there quite often, and he became very good friends with my uncle, Alan Turnus. So I heard many funny stories about the man even before I started reading his work, before I even got into this business.
Oh, how interesting.
So, he was a great fellow.
You should write an essay about that.
I should. I should follow up on that.
Yeah, really. That's fascinating. I want to hear as many stories as you can remember.
All right. Well, Alan Turnus is still available for me to interview, so what I should do is... I should follow up on
that. You should follow up on that and find out about memories of Stephen Jay Gould, since now that he has passed, there are going to be no more memories of him, and so it would be great to have whichever ones you have recorded.
I remember an interview with him, and I think he was still alive. It was 10 years ago when we were all afraid of Y2K, and he told us that... people were afraid when 1,000 came along, and now that 2,000 is coming along, we're afraid. And it's just because we have 10 fingers, and this is how we count years. This is why this is important.
This is brilliant, Andy. I think that's obvious. Because we have 10 fingers, we're afraid of
If we had 12 fingers, you know,
we'd
be getting afraid at entirely different times.
This is absolutely true. As soon as you hear that, you have to say, yep, that's true.
Yeah. So, all right, Jumbo, we have time for one more, and then I hope you'll plug Woe one more time and invite people to participate and to subscribe.
This is a short little one from Calvin Trillin, who I interviewed at his house in Greenwich Village. It was interrupted by his wife, Alice, who used to be a writing teacher, who wanted to find out what Writing on the Edge was and if I was authentic. Luckily, she thought I was okay.
Excellent.
So she let me finish the interview. And I gave her a lifetime subscription, which, unfortunately, she passed away recently, too. But Trillin was talking about writing about your family, which he does occasionally. And he said, which struck me, whose work is important enough to justify writing something that is hurtful to his family? Dostoevsky, maybe, and I'm not even sure about him. You have to take an arrogant leap of faith that somehow this is art, and it's too bad people might suffer. It's not art, really. Or if you're an artist, you can think of something else. And I love that because I'm a person who writes about my family, too, but I certainly wouldn't want to write anything that hurts them. I'd rather cut it out than have a successful piece.
And you might say some risque things about your wife, but usually when she's in the room and with her permission.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is the best way to do it. All right. Jumbo, tell us about Writing on the Edge one more time.
Once ahead, we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of Writing on the Edge. There is a website, or you can email me, jdboe@ucdavis.edu. Back issues of all the interviews, issues with the interviews I've read and others are available, including subscriptions. We've been around 20 years. We're starting to give a prize each year of $250 for the best essay and the best interview. And we hope to last another 20 years publishing readable work about writing and teaching writing.
Excellent. Jumbo of the University Writing Program at UC Davis and editor of Writing on the Edge, thanks so much for spending some time with us, and congratulations on this milestone.
Thank you very much, Andy, for having me.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and we'll be right back after this little musical interlude. Here's some jazz. This jazz in the background, I'd like to tell you that certain college students, especially freshmen living in dorms, are at risk for meningitis. If you are a college student, or if you have college-aged children, ask your doctor about immunization against meningitis, or visit the National Meningitis Association website nmaus.org. I'd also like to tell you, with this cool music on in the background, that tonight is Poetry Night at Bistro 33. Tonight, Bob Ostertag will be the featured performer. Bob Ostertag is a multi-talented creative professional with 21 CDs of music, 2 movies, 2 DVDs, and 3 books under his belt. An experimental audio artist, Bob has performed his music all over the world and before very large audiences, and he's collaborated with diverse collections of artists, among them the Kronos Quartet, Mike Patton, Anthony Braxton, and Lynn Breedlove. Bob Ostertag's political writings have been translated into many languages and have been published widely. His most recent book, Creative Life, Music, Politics, People, and Machines, is a collection of journalistic and autobiographical essays about his life as a creative professional, as a journalist, and as a musician. Here's what Jonathan Scott Lee, author of Jacques Lacan, said about Bob's new book. Unique and engaging, Creative Life spins an intriguing narrative, builds a compelling argument about the nature of art and politics, and raises a stimulating set of questions for politically engaged art in an age of digital technologies. Bob Ostertag is currently professor of technicultural studies and music at the University of California at Davis. He teaches TCS 1, Introduction to Technicultural Studies, which is one of the most popular classes in all of humanities, arts, and cultural studies. In 2006, Bob made all of his recordings, to which he owns the rights, available as digital downloads under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. That's something that you can discover if you want to sample his work at bobostertag.com. Bob's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post and will be reading tonight at Bistro 33's Poetry Night. That's tonight, the 2nd of December at 9 p.m., 226 F Street in the city of Davis. If you want to find out more, you can phone over to Bistro 33, 756-4556 in the 530 area code, or you can find this event, Bob Ostertag, reading at Bistro 33's Poetry Night on Facebook. Last I saw, there were almost 50 people signed up to attend. Some of those people you might know. All of them you'll have a chance to greet tonight at Poetry Night. I'll also be there. I'm looking forward to seeing Bob and some other old friends. And perhaps I'll see you there as well. I love this music so much, I don't want to leave it, but we do need to hear this important message from the sponsor of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, the YOLO Federal Credit Union. After that, I'll be back to close out the show. Stick around. This is KDBS.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the YOLO County Federal Credit Union. The YOLO County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout YOLO County. The YOLO County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
As the music dies down on that important sponsorship message, I'd like to tell all of you that if you are a resident of the city of Davis and a poet, then the city of Davis would like to see your application to be the Poet Laureate of the City of Davis. If I remember correctly, and I should, because with KDBS DJ Ron Glick, I wrote the wording of this particular ordinance establishing the Poet Laureate position of the City of Davis. If I remember correctly, it's a 2-year position. It is thoroughly unpaid. And the successful applicant will have the opportunity, nay, the responsibility, to spread widely enthusiasm for and writing of poetry in the City of Davis. I've received messages from a great number of people using a variety of media, including Twitter, Facebook, and this thing called email, of people hoping that I will apply to be Poet Laureate of the City of Davis. But I shall tell you now that I shall not. I am busy enough promoting poetry in this city without needing the laurels. Also, they've asked me to help choose the and interview the applicants. So it wouldn't be right. Some year, perhaps. But now I'm very happy to encourage others to be the first Poet Laureate of the City of Davis. So if you'd like to find out more about this, I invite you to Google Poet Laureate, City of Davis. No doubt you'll come to a City of Davis website that has all the information. If you are unsuccessful, then find me, Andy Jones, for instance, at Andy O. Jones on Twitter, on Facebook, and via many other media. I'd be glad to share with you that information. Well, we're out of time, and it's 6 o'clock. I think all of you know what that means. That means then that coming up fast, DJ Springy will spring right in here and give you some time to get away. That's actually the name of his radio show, Time to Get Away. So stick around for that. Stick around for all the great public affairs programs that you can hear Monday through Friday on this radio station. And if you're interested, perhaps you'll see me tonight at Poetry Night as I, and maybe you, get to see Bob Ostertag read from his new book, Creative Life. My name is Andy Jones. This is KDBS, and I'll see you next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Have a good night, everyone.